Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to read text 24, canto 9, chapter 19, and go back a few verses too that have no purport. Asevitam varshapogan shadvargan vishayeshunsa kshanena mumuche nidam jatapaksha eva dvijaha asevitam varshapogan shadvargam vishayeshusaha kshanena mumuche nidam. Ladies, please. Sadvargam vishayeshu saha janena mamuche nidam jatapaksha eva dvijaha. Asevitam varshapogan shadvargam vishayeshu shaha shanena mumuche nidam jatapaksha iva dvijaha. Asevitam, being always engaged in, varshapogan, for many, many years. Shat vargam, the six senses, including the mind. Vishayeshu, in sense enjoyment. Saha, King Yayati. Kshanena, within a moment. Mumuche, gave up. Nidam, nest. Jatapakshaha, one that has grown its wings. Eva, like. Dvijaha, a bird. So I'm not going to read the translation yet. We're going to go back to text 21 through this verse 24. We'll read the translations. 21. Shukadev Goswami said, after speaking in this way to his wife, Devyani, King Yayati, who was now free from material desires, called his youngest son Puru and returned Puru's youth in exchange for his old age. 22. King Yayati gave the southeast to his son Druhyu, the south to his son Yadu, the west to his son Turvasu, and the north to his son Anu. In this way he divided the kingdom. Yayati enthroned his youngest son Puru as the emperor of the entire world and the proprietor of all its riches. And he placed all the sons, all the other sons who were older than Puru, under Puru's control. Then this one, text 24, translation. Having enjoyed sense gratification for many, many years, O King Parikshit, Yayati was accustomed to it, but he gave it up entirely in a moment, just like a bird flies away from the nest as soon as its wings have grown. And here's the purport. That Maharaj Yayati was immediately liberated from the bondage of conditioned life is certainly astonishing. But the example given herewith is appropriate. A tiny baby bird, dependent fully on its father and mother, even to eat, suddenly flies away from the nest when its wings have grown. Similarly, if one fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is immediately liberated from the bondage of conditioned life, as promised by the Lord himself. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2:4:18. Kiratahu nandra pulinda pulkasha abhira shumbha yavana kashadayaha. Yenye cha papa cha apashraya shraya shudyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Translation. Kiratahuna andra pulunda pokasha abhira shumbha yavana and the kasa races and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, for he is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Lord Vishnu is so powerful that he can deliver anyone at once if he is pleased to do so. And Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, can be pleased immediately if we accept his order by surrendering unto him, as Maharaj Yayati did. Maharaj Yayati was eager to serve Vasudeva, Krishna, and therefore, as soon as he wanted to renounce material life, Lord Vasudeva helped him. We must therefore be very sincere in surrendering ourselves unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Then we can immediately be liberated from all the bondage of conditioned life. This is clearly expressed in the next verse. So some of you are from some other places, and I think I'll go through the storyline a little bit, a little complicated. So get ready for something that's a little complicated. This is ninth canto, and towards the end of the ninth canto. And in this ninth canto, there's description of the lineages of kings in the Sun Dynasty and the Moon Dynasty. Just like, for example, Lord Ramachandra appears in the Sun Dynasty, in the line of Ikshvaku, who is the son of Swayambhuva Manu, who is the son of the sun god, Vivaswan. So there's the Sun Dynasty, and Ikshvaku brought the transcendental knowledge from Krishna to the sun god to Manu, Manu to him. He brought it, and he resided and ruled in Ayodhya. Then without the detail, also in this ninth canto, the lineage of kings from the Moon Dynasty is described, and Krishna appears in that one. So, coming attractions, Krishna is going to make his appearance. at least in the description within this line of the Moon Dynasty. So we're in the Moon Dynasty group, and one of the previous kings in that line was Yayati. So the story goes like this. A little complicated. One day Yayati went to take water from a well, and he found in the bottom of the well a lady. And the lady was the daughter of Shukracharya. Shukracharya is the priest of the Daityas. And how she got in the bottom of the well was a little interesting. She, Devayani, she's the daughter of a Brahmana, elevated Brahmana. She and some of her friends, including Sarmishta, they were bathing, and they were bathing in a lake, and as was sometimes the practice, they were bathing without their clothes. They were just bathing. And Lord Shiva passed by, and along with Parvati. So they were very embarrassed, and they quickly got their clothes and put their clothes on. But by mistake, Sarmishta put her friend's clothes on instead of her own clothes. I don't know how she did that, but so the Brahmana girl got really angry at the Kshatriya girl and let her have it. And the Kshatriya girl let Devayani have it. Sarmishta threw her in the bottom of a well and left. So there is Devayani in the bottom of the well, and King Yayati went to go get some water from the well, and lo and behold, there's a lady in the well. So he helped her out. And she was both very grateful that she got rescued from the bottom of the well, and she was also charmed by Yayati. He was the ruler of the whole planet. He's a powerful and virtuous king. So she wanted to marry him. And although it's unusual, for details we don't need to go into, they married. And because Sarmishta's father was very embarrassed, and to prevent the anger of Devayani's father, he said, my daughter, who threw Devayani in the bottom of the well, can be the maid servant of Devayani. Just serve her and help her. So that happened. So Devayani and Yayati are husband and wife. And after some time, Devayani came to know, because Devayani had a child, and Sarmishta also wanted a child, and so she requested Yayati, I'd like a child. And so he obliged her, and when the father of Devayani found out, he cursed Yayati that he would become an old man. So Yayati went to his sons and one by one requested them, I'll trade you my old age for your youth. They said, no. Except for the youngest son named Puru. And so they exchanged by some mystic power somehow. And so then he ruled Yayati with a young body. instead of the old body that he was cursed to have, he continued to enjoy sensual pleasure with Devayani for a long time. Long, long time. And then a little light went on. This is all temporary. And the sensual pleasures of life are fleeting and burdensome. And so he went to Devayani, and in a parable-like way, or a riddle-like way, or an allegorical-like way, that's better, in an allegorical way, he was describing his circumstance. And he let, through that story, he let Devayani know, you now have grown-up sons, the sons can look after you, and I'm going to leave. And he left. That's what we just heard, after enjoying for a long, long, really long time. Suddenly, knowledge awakened, and detachment following that knowledge, and his readiness to just be engaged in service to Vasudeva Krishna. So that's the storyline. There's more details, but the message that we're hearing here is, as Prabhupada says in the beginning of the purport, that someone who's accustomed for a long time to be an enjoyer of sense gratification can just, on a dime, just turn and walk away from it. It's astonishing. Now, it's possible. It's not at all common. But the potency of devotional service, that's the emphasis in the purport. The potency of devotional service to the Supreme Personality Godhead is extraordinary. The potency is there that at once one can leave behind material activity. Not usual. Once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, I've repeated this many times, a reporter said, Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? You speak about being Krishna conscious. How long does it take? Prabhupada said, less than a moment. And then that less than a moment, two things. One has to let go of the desire to know through the power of speculation, mental speculation. You have to let go of that. And the second is trying to be happy through sense gratification. You have to let go of that. Then he said, and if you just let go of that, then you can at once become Krishna conscious, because that's what's the obstacle for Krishna consciousness. Then he said, generally, people are very attached to these two things, and therefore the process is generally gradual. But it's less than a moment. There's examples of the one from the Bhagavatam. The famous one is Katvanga Maharaj, who he did some beneficial work. He was given the benediction. Whatever you desire, what is that desire that you have? It will be fulfilled. He wanted to know when he would die. And so he was told, oh, you're going to die in the next moment. So he immediately took shelter of the Supreme Personality Godhead, and his involvement with the material energy was gone. Now, just yesterday, by coincidence or Krishna's arrangement, I was listening to a lecture. Srila Prabhupada was speaking. K. California, Los Angeles or somewhere, 1969. And Prabhupada was saying that there's many activities that one can do that can raise one's consciousness. The modes of nature's, lower modes of nature become, influence becomes diminished, consciousness becomes elevated. But if the seed of desire remains, then after some time one will come back. He was speaking of austerities, other, within the Vedic culture, other methods, within other traditions, other methods, by knowledge, by meditation. And one of the recent college programs, there was a group of three students came separately sharing the same thing. I really enjoy meditation. From meditation I can experience there's another consciousness that's accessible, but I can't stay there. It's after some time. So, what's to be done? Prabhupada's explanation, 1969 lecture, was the seed has to be, he was using the word extinguished or crushed. The seed of being a separate enjoyer. Well, gee, if I let go of that one, then what's left? That's life. Being an enjoyer. It doesn't mean the tendency to enjoy is crushed because that's of the soul. But independent enjoyment or competitor enjoyment, being the enjoyer of Krishna's material nature, Prakriti. And that's carried within that the conception of what's my favorite variety of material enjoyment or conceptions of life. It's carried within the mind, according to Bhagavad Gita. Just like air carries aroma. Real graphic one. In New York, there's two main places that they dump garbage. One of them is they put it in barges and take it out to the sea and dump it in the sea. Then there's another one is Staten Island. In New York City, there's five boroughs. Staten Island is literally an island. And there's landfill in Staten Island. And it's near the west coast of Staten Island. And in fact, because of the landfill issue, Staten Island wanted to become a separate city so that New York City can't come and dump their garbage in Staten Island because it stinks. So coming off of the ocean, there's this west to east, what do you call it? Standard wind, traditional wind, whatever, there's some term for it. So it's, the sea breeze is very fresh. And then on the other side of the landfill, it stinks. So that means the whole of Staten Island stinks from the landfill of the whole of New York City. But then the same sea breeze stench of the garbage of the landfill keep going, and then there's this massive botanical garden. Now it's too cold. But in the summertime, that same wind passes over the botanical garden. It's very fragrant. There's the sea breeze, there's the stinky garbage, and then there's the botanical garden. Very nice. But it's just wind. It's just air. Air is odorless, colorless, tasteless, etc. But the wind or air carries aroma and smells good or smells bad. So similarly, the mind carries conceptions. Just like air carries aroma. And within the conceptions within the mind, it's how we have a disposition to enjoy. That's what Prabhupada was speaking of, this seed. And the seed that needs to be crushed is this tendency, expectation, false expectation that I can be the enjoyer of Krishna's property. You know, in common language, that's called the thief. You want to be the enjoyer of somebody's property. But material life is made of thieves because it's Krishna's material, it's Krishna's nature. We say mother nature, but you know, it's his nature. He's the father. It's his energy. Material nature is his energy, and he's the enjoyer of his energy. We're not, but we try to be the enjoyer of his energy, and that seed of desire, even some spiritual process can lift one up, 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 up. But that when that seed is there, there's a very nice verse in the sixth canto, chapter 2, Shukadeva Goswami, describing the bhakti process, specifically he's describing the holy name, that part of the bhakti process. And he makes a comparison and says any other activity that lifts one, yoga process can lift one. And people that practice yoga very seriously, they see it as a spiritual part of a spiritual journey, not just feel good, get trim and slim, and supple body, and just you know, reduce your aches and pains. They see it as part of a spiritual journey. So specifically, explicitly, Maharaj Parikshit says, Shukadeva Goswami says, these other activities, they can lift one. But as long as the modes of nature are still clinging to the mind, one will have to come back down. So that's just the modes of nature means passion. I want to enjoy material nature. There's nothing wrong with our spiritual position is Satchidananda Vigraha. It's natural. But if it's misplaced to be the separate enjoyer, then we're stuck. It's bondage. We're stuck to the cycle of birth and death. So now, back to King Yayati. He wanted to enjoy. And he made his best effort for a long time. But then, not just like he got burned out with sense enjoyment, it really wasn't the fun he was hoping it would be. That's not sufficient because it's like a sine curve. It goes up, but then that lingering is still there or hankering is still there. And even with knowledge and direct experience of the unwanted part of trying to be a material enjoyer, the seed is still there. The seed of wanting to be the independent enjoyer is still there. There's only one thing, according to the Sankhya philosophy, and here it's being expressed, it's who is somebody else becomes the enjoyer. And that somebody else is Vishnu, Yajnavai Vishnu, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, sacrifice for Vishnu or Krishna. And he is the enjoyer. So I do things, same things. We have our nature. Somebody's a scholar, somebody's a laborer, somebody's a doctor, somebody's an engineer, somebody's an architect, somebody's an accountant, we're all something. And just the consciousness behind the activity has to change. In this lecture, Prabhupada was calling it rubber stamp. Just change the rubber stamp. Instead of for sense gratification, it's for Krishna. Everything. We don't have to give things up. Just some things are inappropriate to give to Krishna, so we give those things up. But we just want to do it's our nature for Krishna. Somebody's a musician. Somebody's a dancer. Somebody's a decorator. Somebody's a maintenance person. Somebody's what we have our nature, and we utilize that in service to Krishna. And when that in service to Krishna mood becomes strong, which is what is explained in the purport, Yayati, although he was accustomed a long time for sense gratification with his wife, he had a ever-growing desire to be in service to Vasudeva, Krishna. And that became so strong, literally, it's exceptional. Generally, it's gradual. But in this exceptional case, at once. He left it all with no regret, I miss having my intimate relationship with Devayani. The thought was not there. It was taken away. The seed was crushed by the power of bhakti. So say it reverse. Bhakti has the power to crush the seed of being an independent enjoyer. Generally, it's a gradual process, but it's the bhakti potency that, even if it's gradual, does the trick. And otherwise, it's not going to happen. Otherwise, it's perpetual bondage. Let's just say the same thing in a slightly different way. Each of us, in different trajectories of our spiritual evolution, we're somewhere on the line of going towards Krishna. Some higher, lower, some in between, some different positions. But going towards serving Krishna is what we're all doing to some degree or another. And one of the things that we learn in devotional service is we have a nature, as mentioned already. Some are good at this and some are good at that. It's just we have a nature. And it's appropriate that we engage ourselves according to our nature. But that's not the end of it. We can do things that match our nature and still be in bondage if we're not doing them in the consciousness of this meant for Krishna. That's bhakti. The bhakti principle is what elevates, not doing what's according to our nature elevates. Doing something according to our nature, it's that's varnashram. And then there's daivi varnashram, where the personality of God, it is to be pleased. Let's just take a for example. Young people planning their career. Because I've been spending some time lately with some young people who are planning their undergraduate or in some cases their graduate study. And it's important to help them see what their nature is. And there are different ways of getting a sense of that. But it's bondage. Unless Krishna bhakti is at the center. It's another bondage. It's, it looks good, smells good, feels good. Bondage. Even, we're devotee. It's bondage. Unless the intention of when I take up this activity, Krishna should be pleased. And then how to keep that thought of Krishna should be pleased in the center, because the material tendency is I'm the enjoyer. That's what it's all about. And over there, kind of to the side, is Krishna's in the picture. And that's secular, using a modern word, that secular spirituality. This part is for Krishna, that part is for me. This is my worldly activity and that's my spiritual life. That's secular. Bhagavad Gita is not. Bhagavatam is not. The life of devotion is not. It's everything. Everything is meant for Krishna. So, Yayati was eager to be absorbed in exclusive devotion to Krishna, Vasudev Krishna. He wanted that very, very much. And so he didn't abandon his worldly duties. The term in Sanskrit is karma sannyas. He didn't just renounce his work. He turned the kingdom over to his sons, and uniquely, the youngest became the emperor. Traditionally, the eldest becomes the emperor. But Yayati understood the enormous qualification of his youngest son. The youngest son he sacrificed his youth at his father's request, and he became old. When he gave Puru back his youth, he's still the youngest brother. Now he's the emperor of the world, with his older brothers answering to him because of his spiritual qualification, elevated consciousness, because the person who's going to be directing others should be in elevated consciousness. And if they're not, they should become, because that's a responsibility. Being in elevated consciousness to help others who are looking up to you. So Puru became the emperor of the world, and Yayati left this entangling situation with Devayani and Sarmishta, and you will hear the rest. He was very strongly, in a focused manner, striving for spiritual perfection, to go back to Godhead from a very complicated previous set of circumstances and very sensual set of circumstances. He was a good king, he ruled, but it was pretty mixed, his program. So, conclusion. Bhakti has the power to at once dissolve material entanglement. Bhakti has that power, it's very powerful. We may not experience the fullness of that power, provided, you know, one way you can make sure is just remain attached. Remain attached to sense gratification, these two things, sense gratification and mental speculation. Then the full power of bhakti will not be experienced by you. Something, but not the full power. And the full power of bhakti is such that at once one can clear away all misgivings. Very powerful. So for the new people, I hope the storyline wasn't too difficult to follow. And what's more important is the principle, the bhakti principle that's being presented. So let's see if there's some discussion. Comments or questions? Yes, over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Did King Yayati engage his nature in service to Krishna?
I couldn't hear.
Did King Yayati engage his nature?
Did King Yayati maintain his nature?
Engage. Engage.
Did he engage his nature?
In service to Krishna.
Well, of course. But, you know, the spiritual nature, not necessarily the material one. Because his material nature was kshatriya. But, you know, kshatriyas, when they reach, we know there's many examples, but when they reach a certain stage, as bhakti has grown and grown and grown, the influence, the conditioning influence of material nature, you know, kshatriya. I want to control. Ishvara Bhav in Sanskrit. I want to be the controller. That was practically gone. The influence was gone because of bhakti had grown so much. So the nature was still there. Your question is, was he engaged according to his nature? His higher nature, the spiritual nature, and less so the material nature because of that higher stage of spiritual evolution. And he had this other tendency to be the enjoyer of activities with his good wife, Devayani. And he left that behind also. Bhakti became so strong that became insignificant. So that nature was left behind also. Is it clear?
I have another question.
Yeah.
That's okay. How did King Yayati came to the conclusion that he should engage in devotional service?
How did he do what?
How did he came to the conclusion he should perform devotional service?
Well, it has to be association. Association with somebody that understood the importance of devotional service. Through that association, that's how he received it and grew it. Something else? Subal?
Thank you, Sri Rama Goswami. the manifestation of say in someone who is pursuing devotional service, who is a devotee, and who's still affected by material desires and
yes.
The subtle manifestations of this attachment to mental speculation and sense gratification, if you can sort of mention about those subtle manifestations and how they do look like.
And how does it look like?
Yeah, and what?
It's a mix. And depending upon, you know, the degree and the variety, and it looks all kinds of different ways. Mm. Depends on the mix.
Like for example,
you know, any one of us. we're all a little different. We all have a little different mix. There's some bhakti, a desire to be in service to Krishna, and there's some other ones. Now, the goal is not stop doing what we're doing. The goal is not, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, karma sannyas, give up your duty. That's not the goal. And that's like a sign that now you're there, the bell rings. You get a 10 after your name. That's not it. The goal is, for whom is this activity being performed? And then there's engagement without attachment. Anasaktasya vishayan yatharam upayunjitaha nirbanda krishna sambande. That's the Rupa Goswami's teaching. We continue, but without attachment. Without attachment to this, using the same language that Prabhupada was using, the seed of being an independent enjoyer. We recognize Krishna is the enjoyer. That's the position of love is the position of happiness. Not lust, like, you know, whatever different ideas that people have of lust. One of our members here, I won't use the name, was sharing something that they were reading about subtle sex or subtle enjoying of Prakriti within the mind. Of course, that then leads to the gross. So the contemplations lead to activity, physical activity. But that's that seed. So the activity of, like Arjuna, the activity of being a warrior, didn't have to give up being a warrior. The activity of being a musician, doesn't, you have to give up being a musician. It's, for whom are you doing this? So, are we on target with your question, or there's more?
Yeah, I'll pass it to you in a second. Yes, I was thinking also in terms of, it is very graphic, and obviously we can understand very easily the sense gratification power, because it manifests in so many gross ways.
Yeah.
However, the mental speculation thing for a devotee is not as easy to understand. And how mental speculation manifests in our beginning stages?
Does it manifest in the beginning stages?
In our progress in Krishna consciousness, you know.
Well, the desire to know. Well, I'll give a practical example, since you were asking examples. There's a devotee who, before he was a devotee, he used to write, shh, shh, shh. He used to write poetry. Now he became a devotee, and he hasn't been writing poetry for a while. So someone was recommending, maybe you should write poetry. And he asked me, should I be writing poetry? Because it's a propensity. But, you know, I said, I got some very good advice when I was a new devotee. I was also writing poetry. Before I start writing poetry in Krishna consciousness, read the poetry of perfected souls, Narottam Das Thakur, and so. But because otherwise it's going to come from mental speculation. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, that sounds nice. But it's mental speculation. We don't know. And we're writing poetry. So receive from the perfected souls. And then not just you copy their style, but the heart becomes cleansed. The subject matter becomes clear. This, you know, the clouds in the sky part, and you can see the sun. You can describe the sun. And as well, in a proper manner, what it's like to be under the clouds. But there's a tendency to know things without that purification, without that descending and cleansed process. Anything. I mean, particularly spiritual topics. Tendency. Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to know, so when you do things, like you could be doing something good, but how do you know if what you're doing is, how do you decipher what you're doing is for Krishna, or if you're still doing things for desire? Because I feel like people can do things that are maybe good.
Yeah.
But how do you know that you are connected to what
good
God
question.
Wants?
Good question. Short answer. It's safe to assume, especially in the beginning or the earlier stages, there's a mix. Safe to assume. There's something and there's something. There's something that's for Krishna. There's that spark. or maybe a flame, that I want to do this for Krishna. And then there's something over there too, practically for sure, some mix. So now let's just modify the question. How do we move from the mixed to the unmixed? How do we know that we're moving both? That the move is facilitated by quality or conscious devotional practice, hearing, chanting, reading. I mean, compliments to you. 4:30 in the morning, and it's bitter cold outside, and here you are at Mangal Arati. I mean, that says something. Wow. I mean, it's warm inside instead of cold outside, but you know, you came through the cold to get here, so fantastic. So that's something we can show to Krishna, that there's some sincerity. It's right in the purport here. Sincerity is required, and when one becomes more and more sincere, it's like light comes on, and then you can see where it's not clean, like the heart. Before the light's on, we can't see so well. Something, but as we become more sincere, we become more purified. As we become more purified, we'll discover more of the mix than we even knew was there before. You'll see as you go along. So, what to do? You just keep with the elevation process and be introspective, putting primary focus on the horse that's pulling the cart. The horse that's pulling the cart is, let me try sincerely to do whatever it is that I do for Krishna, knowing that there's a mix. And that's the horse. And then the horse is going to pull the cart. The cart is, I've got this other stuff going on, so let me sort through it and discard it. And then, you know, it's easier to discard the ones we're less attached to, and it's more difficult to discard the ones we're more attached to, the other mixed stuff. And then it gets down to the language that I was repeating from Prabhupada, that is the seed, the very seed of being an independent enjoyer. It's what, according to Bhagavad Gita, it's what brings us here, and it's what keeps us here. So you can have, you know, pretty much clean, and that seed is still there that says, I'm not letting go of that one. Not letting go of that one. If I let go of that one, I've got nothing. I'm not going to let go of that one. And so there's bondage. So there has to be some trust in Krishna as a, you know, a trustworthy object, that I just place myself fully in his care, and all that thing that was going to be like independent enjoyment, my needs are going to be taken care of. The language, anyway, it's progressive. So just do a little summary once again. Let's assume safely that there's a mix. Something for Krishna, something for me. Something for Krishna, something for me. Me, me, Krishna, Krishna. That's our mantra. And we want to move things towards the Krishna side, knowing that there's a mix. And keep striving. Keep the horse in front, and we'll pull the cart, and you'll see what's in the cart as the light goes on. And you'll make an effort to discard the mixed stuff. And since, if one is sincere, it's a small thing, but a very important thing. Subtle thing, not small. If we're sincere, we'll see the mixed stuff. And some are more tenacious than others. But we just keep going. Don't beat ourselves up. Keep going with the pleasing Krishna part. And some strength will come. Some intelligence will come. and combine the strength and intelligence, and you can let go of that, you know, some of that other more tenacious stuff. And then just keep, if you keep the cart pulled by the horse, you'll get there. All the strength, all the intelligence, all the ability, everything you need. So the requirement is sincerity. I want to be in this position of love. We all desire that, without exception. We want to love and be loved. And this is supreme love. So I hanker for that. And I don't want to stop somewhere along the way and become complacent. Oh, I feel, I'm not suffering so much like I was before, so I'll just take a little vacation now. Then you're back to where we were. So you have to keep going. With sincerely to reach that goal. You know, as one goes further, that desire becomes stronger. At least it's meant to become stronger. The potential is there, the potency is there, stronger, stronger. We're going to be discussing this. I plan to speak this very point tomorrow morning in my discussion in the morning. You'll be here, I think. Anything else? Jitendra, you got something cooking over there? I can tell.
I just remember this verse that's 2:4:18 years ago, Prabhupada mentioning the Huns.
The Huns.
And then we remember in school there was a leader of the Huns. His name was Attila.
Attila the Hun.
And he was a very ferocious fellow.
Very ferocious. Tough guy. But, don't meet up in a dark alley with Attila the Hun.
So this Krishna consciousness is for all these races.
Yeah.
There's 9 of them here. So that came to mind, you know, remembrance from about this verse.
Well, here's one for you. It's in the right in the purport. Kasha. It's Mongolia and China. And specifically in the purport, Prabhupada said they have a little, you know, hair above their lip, little mustache. And it's like a whole group of people. So they're in that category too. They're candidates for going back to Godhead as well.
And they have the Yavanas here too.
Yeah.
So even they can become purified.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada ki.